This is an iHeart podcast.
Let's talk about the government, America, Americans, the response to this hurricane stuff. We have Senator Eric Schmidt here, Savannah Hernandez, Sean Spicer with some October surprise stuff, all that coming up on I'm Right. All right, let's talk about the government, America, Americans, the Hurricane Helene response, the aftermath, the flooding. Let's just have a chat about all this before we get specifically to the hurricane and FEMA and the government and those things. I want to talk about anti-humans. This is going to be about the government, anti-humans, what their motivation is. Why do they say the things they say? Why do they do what they do? And why do they not do the things they don't do? I'm sure that's not how you're supposed to put that, but you understand what I mean. Why don't they do this? They should do this, they don't. They do this, they shouldn't. What? Why? Well, we call them anti-humans. I didn't come up with that phrase. Others have used it before for communists. But why anti-human? Why are they so anti-human? Well, we could get into the demonic nature of the communists, but we don't need to do that right now. I want to go a different route. Have you ever known somebody, you undoubtedly have, have you ever known somebody in your life who is transactional? Ever had a transactional friend, neighbor, acquaintance? Kind of guy, you never hear from him. 6 months to a year, you don't hear from him. Calls you up out of the blue one day, hey, Bill, let's go get a beer, I miss you. And you're thinking, yeah, I'll go get a beer with him. And you go sit down for a beer with him. And within 5 minutes, he's asking to borrow your tool set and needs to borrow your car along with it. And then it dawns on you, light bulb goes on, wait a minute, you want to have a beer with me? I'm transactional, I'm used. I'm used for his purposes, and beyond his purposes, he never thinks of me at all. You've known people like this in your life, you've worked with people like this. There are people like that. Well, when your government turns evil, when the people who lead your country lose any sense of honor or duty to the people, the government, the people who occupy your government, they turn transactional. You, the American citizen, you're just transactional to them. And you see this by the differing ways they respond to differing challenges. Disasters, well, I don't know what word we're going to put on it, tragedies. Remember just a couple nights ago when J.D. Vance was beating the crap out of Tim Walz in the debate? Remember when Sandy Hook came up?
I think all the parents watching tonight, this is your biggest nightmare. Look, I got a 17-year-old, and he witnessed a shooting at a community center playing volleyball. Those things don't leave you. As a member of Congress, I sat in my office surrounded by dozens of the Sandy Hook parents, and they were looking at my 7-year-old picture on the wall. Their 7-year-old were dead, and they were asking us to do something.
You previously opposed an assault weapons ban, but it's only later in your political career did you change your position. Why?
Yeah, I sat in that office with those Sandy Hook parents. I've become friends with school shooters. I've seen it.
But we'll set aside that last little verbal hiccup there, friends with school shooters, but see what he did there? We are years removed from Sandy Hook, and not that it's not still horrible, it's awful. One of the worst days of my life, to be honest with you, that didn't personally involve me, it was just awful. Anyway, we're years removed from Sandy Hook, and we're at a VP debate in the year of our Lord 2024, and Walz is bringing it up, and he even noticed he brought up the picture of his son, his 7-year-old son, and then the parents. Why? Do you think Tim Walz goes to sleep at night, wakes up in the morning, and spends even a split second thinking about Sandy Hook? Well, no. Sandy Hook was an opportunity. It wasn't a tragedy. The communist doesn't think in those terms. When you're in anti-human, there's no such thing as a human tragedy. You understand? No such thing. It doesn't matter. You think, well, if it got too bad, they would care. No. There's no such thing as a human tragedy to an anti-human because they're purely transactional. No matter what happens, whether it's great, whether it's terrible, everything is simply an opportunity to move the revolution forward. President of the United States of America, surveying the worst hurricane aftermath since Hurricane Katrina, and honestly, from the things I'm hearing on the ground, it may end up being worse. He made it about climate change.
Let me close with this. Nobody can deny the impact of climate crisis anymore. At least I hope they don't. They must be brain dead if they do.
Imagine, as President of the United States of America, you're surveying death, bodies hanging from the trees, homes wiped out, people still missing their loved ones, and you bring up climate change and try to put a little bow on that argument, and now you can't argue it anymore. How could you be so cold? Look, they did it at the debate the other night. This thing happened before that debate, and this was how it was talked about during the debate.
Let's turn now to Hurricane Helene. The storm could become one of the deadliest on record. More than 160 people are dead, and hundreds more are missing. Scientists say climate change makes these hurricanes larger, stronger, and more deadly because of the historic rainfall.
They can't help themselves. Why? It's a transactional relationship. You, here in East Tennessee, you're in North Carolina, your life's been wiped out, your grandma washed away, you haven't seen your dog in 3 days, still, there's no tragedy there. You're transactional. You see, I can look at your suffering if I'm an anti-human, no matter what you're going through. If I don't care about humanity or you, you're just an opportunity for me. Now, they know, they can't be too forward about that. They try to cover it up in the best of ways, but it's interesting that even when they try to cover it up, it kind of comes out of them in the worst ways. Did you see what they're doing for the victims? $750?
And the federal relief and assistance that we have been providing has included FEMA providing $750 for folks who need immediate needs being met.
$750. Did you know that FEMA spent $641 million this year alone on illegal immigrants? Did you know that? Yes, that's right. The Emergency Disaster Relief Federal Government Organization took $641 million of your money this year alone and handed it out to illegals. And when people, American citizens in North Carolina and Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, lost everything, the federal government showed up and handed them a $750 check. It's so insulting. They might as well have showed up, lined every single survivor up, and spit in every single one of their faces. Now, let's be clear about something. It's not that the federal government actually should be involved in this at all, because they can't be. They're such a disorganized, evil disaster, they can't be. But now that they are, normal Americans are seeing just how deeply evil, treasonous, and disloyal the United States government has become. Hundreds of millions of dollars to bring foreigners into your country to take your job, your school, your health care, and your home. And if a flood or a hurricane happens to wipe you out, they'll stroke you a $750 check and then complain that you're whining a little bit too much. That is the kind of government we currently live under. Evil. These people are evil. They're not wrong. They're not bad. We're dealing with some kind of anti-human evil here that is palpable, and we better accept it and act on it. Now, that said, I know it's been a lot of terrible tragedy, terrible stories. The things people are texting me and emailing me from the ground over there are so bad. It's so bad. And as more and more comes out, we will all see just how bad it's been. Now, obviously, all that's the bad. The government's bad. The tragedy's bad. It's terrible. But on the lighter side, on the better side, not lighter, but on the better side, what I've seen from Americans since Helene tore through this country has been so amazing. I haven't felt this inspired. I know that's odd in the face of so much tragedy and death to feel inspired, but I haven't felt this inspired about my fellow Americans since Hurricane Harvey happened. Hurricane Harvey happened in my area, the Houston area, and the whole place was underwater for days. And the place did not descend into anarchy, as so many places around the world would. We cared for each other. Everybody did. Everyone. It was universal. People came from other states, from across the country, just to help. Food, water, rafts, boats. We had the Cajun Navy cruising in from Louisiana like the Spanish Armada. I was so inspired watching it, watching neighbor help neighbor. And now you have just devastation. Towns along the river washed away. They're gone. And Americans from all over the country, many of them veterans, not all, but many of them veterans, swoop in. Food, water, medical care, shelter, repairing bridges. What has been happening over the last few days, not by the federal government, all they can do is ruin everything and screw everything up, but what has been happening over the last few days should inspire you about your fellow Americans. Yes, our government is stupid, evil, and wrong, but the American people are not. And what America is the American people. We are not the government. It's you, it's me, it's all of us. And in the face of unimaginable tragedy and suffering, Americans once again stood up for their fellow Americans and will continue to do so. That is where my hope lies, in you. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, Savannah Hernandez has been all over the reporting on the impact of illegal immigration on American communities. She is going to join us next to discuss that for a few minutes. Before she does that, I love Pure Talk. I just do. I love Pure Talk. I always love them anyway because, look, they share my values. They send money to veterans, helping get them back on their feet. They don't spend a bunch of money on putrid filth like all the other major cell phone carriers do. I've always loved Pure Talk, but maybe the thing that means the most to me is their CEO is a Vietnam veteran. Two tours. Mac V. Sog. Dude is, look, he loves America. Would die for America. Has proved it over and over again. How about Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile? Do you get that? With Pure Talk, you get that. You can keep your phone, keep your number. It's the same 5G network. You're not sacrificing service. Make the switch. It's cake. Spend a few minutes on a website. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. You want to keep your phone? Keep it. You want to change your phone? Change it. It's easy. Make the switch. Support a company who shares your values. Well, the bad news is the border is wide open and murders and rapists are flooding into the country. But the good news is there are so many states in this country that are far away from the border, and it's obviously not going to affect them at all. I mean, think about it. Maine, they're obviously not struggling with any of this. Joining me now, Savannah Hernandez, one of the real, talented street reporters I've seen in this country. She's a reporter for Turning Point USA. Savannah, look, it's bad here in Texas, but at least it's okay in Maine, right?
You know, Jesse, I wish I could say so, but unfortunately, and we have been to three separate, very small towns here in Maine, and we're actually seeing the immigration crisis up this way. So we hit Bangor, we hit Lewiston, and right now we're in Brunswick, which is closer to the bigger city here in Maine, and we are seeing migrants from particularly Africa all the way up here, which I was very surprised about. They also have a very big Somalian population up this way, which again was surprising to me because I wouldn't expect these people to be all the way up in Maine.
Okay, Savannah, you told us right before you got on that there's something about that apartment complex right there over your shoulder. What is it?
All right, Jesse, so you're actually getting my exclusive. I'm going to be putting this out later tonight or tomorrow, actually. But I'm currently standing in front of the apartments that were created initially for Maine residents, but are now being used to house migrants up here in Maine. And I just want to kind of pan with you guys. You guys can see these buildings behind me. But migrants are getting 2 years of free rent. The units are completely furnished. They have balconies. And also, they get free utilities, right? We went and we spoke to the people who actually live here. And we asked them, hey, are you paying any water bills, any electricity bills? They said, nope, we are not. And Jesse, I know that FEMA is very popular in the news right now. So a big surprise to your guests. This is a county that received funding from the exact same FEMA program that spent about $1 billion sheltering illegal immigrants all across the nation over the past 2023 to 2024 fiscal year. And again, this is the same FEMA that said that they do not have funding for victims of Hurricane Helene.
Okay, I'm sorry, Savannah, I hate to ask you to repeat yourself. Did you just say that they brought in a bunch of people from Africa, gave them fully furnished apartments, and they're paid for by who? Please don't tell me the American taxpayer is paying this when they can't afford groceries.
So I unfortunately do have to say that it is the taxpayers that is footing the bill for the 2 years of free rent for these migrants. And again, Jesse, there's a caveat here that the migrants, if they do get a job, that 30% of their income does have to go to their rent. But whether or not they get that job, they are still guaranteed 2 years of free rent. And again, we have to ask the question, at what point as an American has the government ever given you a, because again, these are marketed as premium apartments. Oh, Jesse, this one, you're going to love this. If as an American, you want to rent one of these apartments, going to cost you around $1,800 for a one bedroom, $2,300 for a two bedroom. But if you are a migrant up this way from, you know, Congo, Haiti, Angola, you can go ahead and get 2 years of free rent.
Good God, $2,300 for a two bedroom. I am so old. I couldn't imagine I've afforded that. Okay, Savannah, before I let you go, I'm sure you've spoken to people who are actual residents of Maine, residents of that area. Are they aware, alarmed, angry, happy about all this? What do they say about any of this?
Well, as you would imagine, Jesse, because we are on the East Coast, a lot of the people over here do have very liberal leanings. I mean, if you even look into the local news in some of these areas where I did speak to residents and they were saying, yeah, there's an uptick in violence. There's an uptick in shooting. I had a coworker who was robbed at this very building. I got that story because, you know, classic me. I'm walking down this seedy area, and this guy's like, hey, just be careful because our coworker got robbed at that house, and that house that you're right next to is a drug den, so be careful. So the residents, again, very much talking about the uptick in crime, the uptick in violence, how they are feeling unsafe. Other residents, however, sharing that it's not an issue and that they actually want to welcome more migrants. We talked to a member of Catholic Charities, actually, who said, they brought 150 migrants up to Bangor. They're bringing 150 more, and they are planning to have the door open so they can continue to keep receiving more and more migrants.
Good God. Savannah, please stay safe out there. Be good. Thank you for what you do. Jeez. Whew. Anyway, are you going to have trouble sleeping at night after all this? No, you're not. Because even after all this, you're going to have Dream Powder from Beam. You know that? Dream Powder is the best. And it's not because it puts you to sleep. Yes, that's nice, but let's be honest. Nothing that special about that. There's lots of things you can take that'll put you to sleep. Over-the-counter things, prescription things. How many things make you feel good, though, when you wake up from that sleep? Not many. In fact, I've never had any except for Dream Powder from Beam because it's natural. It's a cup of hot chocolate. It's got melatonin, natural things in it. It puts you to sleep. But it's when you wake that actually matters. You wake up, those eyes of yours flutter open, and you know, oh, that was good sleep. It's going to be a good day. Go get some Dream Powder from Beam in your life. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Did he lose the 2020 election?
Tim, I'm focused on the future. Did Kamala Harris censor Americans from speaking their mind in the wake of the 2020 COVID situation?
That is a damning non-answer.
It's a damning non-answer for you to not talk about censorship. But you guys attack us for not believing in democracy. The most sacred right under the United States democracy is the First Amendment. You yourself have said there's no First Amendment right to misinformation. Kamala Harris wants to use the power of government and big tech to silence people from speaking their minds. That is a threat to democracy that will long outlive this present political moment.
You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. That's the test. That's the Supreme Court test.
Tim, fire in a crowded theater. You guys wanted to kick people off of Facebook for saying that toddlers shouldn't
Senator,
wear
the
masks.
Senator, the governor does
that's
have the floor.
Fire in a crowded theater, that is criticizing the policies of the government, which is the right of every American.
You'll notice the commie hag moderator stomped all over J.D. Vance when he was making the most effective point there, that these people wanted people censored for saying toddlers shouldn't wear freaking masks. But setting that aside, let's just talk for a moment about how built in, how, I don't know, conditioned we are to some of the most insane things. You realize that an American politician at any level saying you should be able to censor hate speech, that in and of itself should end your political career, and you probably should have to move your family someplace and change your name, because hate speech is the most protected thing. Joining me now, Senator Eric Schmidt of the state of Missouri. Senator, if you wouldn't mind, since you're a lot more eloquent about this stuff than I am, would you explain to people about the importance of freedom of speech, and not that it's just speech you and I happen to agree with? If I want to stand up at the rooftop and say something insane and hateful and awful, I'm an American and I should be allowed to do so.
That's right. It really, the First Amendment is the beating heart of our Constitution. What it means is that you have the ability to speak your mind. It protects fundamental human expression, including and especially those ideas that people find really offensive. And we ought to defend the idea that somebody can say something like that, because in our country, a substitute for violence that we see around the world, political violence throughout history and in the world, is supposed to be us making these decisions at the ballot box and speaking our mind in the town square or the virtual town square as it exists now. And so the real quote unquote threat to democracy has been the one political party that's been trying to jail their political opponent, trying to turn 10 to 15 million illegal immigrants into voters, and the political party that engaged in a vast censorship enterprise with some of the biggest companies in the history of the world. And that's Kamala Harris's record. That's Joe Biden's record. That's Anthony Fauci's record. That's all of these agencies that are engaged in this to shut down speech, whether it's Hunter Biden laptop, whether it was efficacy of masks, whether it was the Wuhan, the lab origination fact that people called a conspiracy theory at the time. We're supposed to be able to dissent. And guys like Tim Walz, they don't believe in that. And that's the real, like I said, threat to democracy.
It is. And setting aside that goober from Minnesota, I'm shocked at how pervasive this way of thinking is with the people who lead all, really, I was about to say America, but really it's all of Western civilization. This video of John Kerry has been making the rounds, and it is frightening if you consider the implications of what he says here.
But look, if people go to only one source, and the source they go to is sick and has an agenda, and they're putting out disinformation, our First Amendment stands as a major block to the ability to be able to just, hammer it out of existence.
Yeah, John Kerry. Yeah, hammer it out, Senator? What does he want to do with it exactly?
Well, if we could just get that pesky Constitution out of the way, all the experts could decide what we can think of here. I mean, it is totally insane. But look, at this guy ran for president. John Kerry was like, he's the climate czar. He was Secretary of State. This is not some blogger in his basement. Like, this is how pervasive this idea is among, 2024 Democrats. This is not your grandpa's liberal, where they would actually defend free speech. This is sort of like the full culmination of a Marxist ideology where it's focused on total power and control. That's what this is all about. It's to silence people. It's to intimidate people. And that's what the First Amendment stands to, protect. And by the way, it's also worth mentioning, Jesse, that the media just sort of is okay with this now, too. They're a mouthpiece for the left. They don't check any of this stuff. The only fact checking they do, and I'm glad JD stood up and pushed back against those moderators, because again, it was a 3-on-1 once again, but he performed great, won that debate, and I think made a really important case as you led with the fight against censorship.
Senator, you're there in the belly of the beast. I say oftentimes that the people who lead this country see themselves not as servants or senators or congressmen or presidents or whatever they happen to be. They see themselves as kings and queens, and we're the peasants, and they're really, really just kind of aggravated by the fact they can't rule like kings and queens. But you're there. I'm not. Am I wrong?
Well, I think what you've seen over the last 100 years, Jesse, is when we talk about the dangers of the administrative state, look, you know, they had this guy, Joe Biden, who was mentally incompetent. If the poll numbers would have suggested otherwise, and Trump didn't have the knockout blow in that debate, they would have been perfectly happy having him be the front man because they knew they could wield all this power through these agencies. Same with Kamala Harris. I mean, she's not some Barack Obama meets Elvis Presley phenomenon or something, right? She's like, they were criticizing her just a few months ago. But they don't really care, because as long as they have somebody as a mouthpiece, they can do their bidding through these agencies that are not accountable to anybody. That, again, that's the real threat to democracy. They're totally fine with that. And the idea that you're hitting on is that in our republic, we're supposed to be accountable. Like, as a senator, the people of Missouri, they sent me there, they can send me back, or they can send me home. We don't vote on stuff anymore because Chuck Schumer does these omnibus bills. We don't vote on things anymore because they just let these agencies do their bidding. And that's why, one of the reasons why people are frustrated. In fact, in my opening speech, the first speech I ever gave, Jesse, coming from being Attorney General to this job, I talked about the two real threats to our republic. The first is, we're talking about both of them right now, this sort of threat to democracy that we have with censorship and the growth of the administrative state. Those are the two main reasons, as I see it, why there's so much frustration out there. It's because people feel like they elect people, but nothing really changes in their life, except it gets worse when you have terrible leadership like Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Senator, how do we fix that? There are so many moments that stand out to me. One of the ones that really drove it home was when Chuck Grassley was, and I think this is before you were there, you were still dominating in the state of Missouri, but Chuck Grassley was interrogating Christopher Wray, and Christopher Wray essentially told him to his face to hurry it up, that he's got a plane to catch. Grassley sat there dumbfounded, and Christopher Wray got up, hopped on a plane, and went on vacation. That is... not the way the balance of power is supposed to work. If you're the director of the FBI, you should be pooping your pants when the chairman of the Judiciary Committee wants more time with you, and yet it appears to be flipped. How do we flip it back?
Well, I think a couple things need to happen. The first is we've got to have a budget process. I think people think, Jesse, that we like have individual appropriation bills and people get to offer amendments and we get to say, you know what, I got a problem with this agency, we're going to pull funding from that, we got to get their attention, there needs to be a policy change. But instead, there's just one big omnibus right before Christmas, very little input, and sort of permanent Washington gets its way. We got to fight against that, number one. Number two, I think getting President Trump into office, he's got 4 years. I think he is committed to actually undoing some of these wrongs and being someone who can have a legacy of defanging these agencies. Because a lot of presidents of both parties, by the way, have been perfectly happy to see the executive branch's power grow. We got to get that away from the executive branch, where they're not really accountable, back in the legislative branch, where we have to vote on things. Like, if you want to ban gas stoves, we should have to vote on it. If you've got some crazy idea that you're trying to shove down the throats, take away their liberty, we should have to vote on it. Then every 2 or 6 years, we come before the voters and we're accountable. We don't have any of that right now.
Speaking of accountable, Senator, we cannot have John Cornyn, John Thune, the same old group of losers, system-serving losers, running the United States Senate in the GOP. But I understand from my sources that Cornyn is right now the leader in the clubhouse because the good guys don't run. I don't know whether Rick Scott is going to mount a run or not, but we cannot have this, otherwise nothing ever changes.
Well, I'm taking this very seriously. There's Rick Scott has declared that he's running. John Cornyn's declared he's running. And John Thune has declared the running. I'm talking to each one of them. because I want to see reforms. I want to see a Republican Party that reflects who our voters are, right? And so that when we go back up there in January, we actually have an agenda. We're going to get, we're going to protect people's pocketbooks. We're going to protect their liberties. And we don't get caught up in the things that permanent Washington wants to do. So it's a very important decision. These kind of opportunities to pick a new leader don't come up very often, about once in a generation. There's a whole new group of folks there that I think share a similar view that I have. And so it's a very one-on-one kind of thing right now, where you're just trying to talk to everybody that's running and get a sense of what their plans are.
Fingers crossed. Senator, you're one of the few good ones we have. We appreciate you very much on this show. Thank you. All right. It's October surprise time. Sean Spicer's always all over this stuff. He's going to join us to talk about it next. It's October. I know that's breaking news, but it's October. And that, of course, means it's October surprise time. And just going to prep the ground before we bring in Sean Spicer to give you all the breakdown of this. But remember this. October surprises somehow still take many political people by surprise. There are going to be breaking scandals, breaking news. Oh my gosh, I can't believe this. It happens every single election cycle. And unless you're prepped and steeled and ready for it, you're not going to be ready for it. So here we are. It's October. We're a month before the election, give or take. There are going to be huge things drop in the news and pushed for purely political reasons. So get ready. Joining me now, the man who knows a lot more about this than me and most of us, Sean Spicer of the incredible Sean Spicer Show. Sean, the October surprise is used because the October surprise works, my friend.
Yeah, well, look, the bar for an October surprise has gotten pretty high after you see a president get two assassination attempts, the other party president get pushed out of the way for a person that never got a single vote. So I feel like the October surprise, like the bar keeps getting higher for what we're going to get shocked with. We've already seen a port strike, Israel under attack, a natural disaster. Look, I am concerned. I think that in normal circumstances, this Jack Smith filing yesterday, so close to an election, would have gotten a lot more attention. But, you know, we're almost getting numb to what a surprise will mean right now. But I am concerned because, look, what we saw in the last two debates was a message that has gone out to the media and everybody, which is we have to stop this guy from getting back in. So there's something coming. I don't know what it is or when it would, because if that were the case, I'd buy more Powerball tickets. But what scares me right now, Jesse, is that I think that the establishment world understands what an existential threat Donald Trump poses to the way of life that so many of the folks in D.C. live by, to make money, to keep power. And so I think I worry about it. As we get into these final 30 days, every day I'm going, okay, is this the day that they shock us with something?
Sean, walk me through the decision-making process of the mustache. I shaved one of those in a couple years ago because I'm a huge fan myself, and my wife threw an absolute fit. She didn't like it at all. I think that's a manly look. That's what a man looks. A man has a good mustache like that. Walk me through the decision-making process there.
For me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do it every July, and then I just kept going. But I think our wives are probably on the same page. My wife was like, okay, this is huge. I tolerate this for a couple weeks in July, but can you get rid of it? And every week I keep saying, all right, I'll get rid of it. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's because I haven't been able to in the past just for professional reasons, but I kind of enjoy it. It makes the mornings a little bit easier. But I will tell you, it's not. I think you wear it well. I don't know that I feel like I'm treading on leprechaun territory.
Well, my wife doesn't think I wear it well. Okay, back to the serious stuff. Sean, I actually echo exactly what you just said there. In fact, I just had a conversation with my wife about that, since we weren't talking about my mustache last night, that these people are pushing all their chips to the center of the table. They have convinced themselves and sadly half the American public that stopping Donald Trump is the only thing that matters. It doesn't matter what rule, what law, whatever you have to do to throw aside, you must stop him at any cost. Now some dirty communists tried to kill him twice. We've had two straight debates where the moderators, honestly, it's not even biased, Sean. They were always biased. It was over the top. It was over the top to the point it was clear the networks are all in as well. If everyone's all in and we're a month before the election, I am concerned, my brother. I am. I'm concerned for his safety. Look, I am.
Yeah, I think big tech, potentially a Jack Smith thing. I mean, there's a few of these things that I think are ripe. What could big tech do to throw something out there? I mean, I'll give you two instances. One, the Timmy in Tiananmen Square, right? First of all, how do you for decades tell people you're in Tiananmen Square and at one of the largest uprisings in modern history and suddenly go, you know, the more I think about it, I was at Target outside of Edina. Like, how do you not know that you were at there? And the CBS folks just let it go. It's a pattern of lying over and over again that any candidate would have to deal with. He lied about IVF. He lied about carrying weapons of war. He lied about his command sergeant major thing. He lied about getting an award in Nebraska. And the guy's got a pattern. But then secondly, the story that came out in the Daily Mail, where Doug Emhoff, who is now the new standard bearer for masculinity, is accused first a few weeks ago. Not accused. Apparently, it's not even an accusation. He got the nanny knocked up and his first wife and then paid her off. And then this one, there's an actual allegation of abuse. And the Democratic Party and those around Doug Emhoff, who they put in this campaign, just to be clear, I'm not a big fan of going after families. They decided that he was going to be the new standard bearer for masculinity. And now we get told, don't worry, there's nothing. I mean, like, where's Doug Emhoff responding to the story as a normal person? This is something that should be outraging every woman that says there's an accusation that he got drunk and he hit a woman. And yet we're not even having anyone ask a single question about it. I find it ridiculous. And so surprises come in both ways, Jesse. And so the issue is we're going to see some surprises that come out that go after Donald Trump, right? Like I said, big tech, election interference, another prosecution. But then they're going to suppress anything that comes out on their side because what would normally, I mean, this should have been a nightly news story. This should be full on the second gentleman, the person who would be, you know, the new first gentleman, has these massive allegations. He has a history of, you know, issues with women. And here we go. Nothing. Zero. Nada. And they admitted on the first one, by the way, with the nanny, that they withheld that information during the vetting process when she was up for VP. What else have they lied out? What else is in Doug Emhoff's background? And I get he's not the president, but this is a continued pattern of people around Kamala Harris that have problems.
It is an ugly pattern as well. And as you pointed out, they held this guy up as the standard of the new masculinity, which was hilarious with that effeminate dork. But we're not going there right now, actually, because I do want to ask you about some electoral things. Okay. All right. Obviously, we're not going to make politics anything about Hurricane Helene and the things those people are going through. But North Carolina is a swing state. It's important. It's hard to see how this stuff couldn't have some effect on the election. Donald Trump, to his credit, paused his campaign to go do some things there. But these kind of disasters, do they affect elections, Sean, in any way?
Yeah, so there's two ways that they affect the election. Overall, when you're the incumbent, so a Kamala Harris situation, how do you react to that? How do you get aid to folks? So, you know, you look back through her, you know, Katrina, Sandy, et cetera, how the incumbent office holder handled that disaster is important. So that's the one hand. But then the second point, which I think you're getting at, is the electoral piece itself, right? I mean, again, mm-hmm. God bless the people who are dealing with this. I hope they get the aid that they serve. But we're 30 days out from an election. I think we need to talk about this. If you're the Democratic Party in North Carolina, where you've relied on early vote and absentee ballot vote, mail-in vote, and suddenly that's taken off the table, plus the ability to effectively communicate with them through mail, phones, digital, et cetera, right? So if you're down in the Asheville or Western area of North Carolina and suddenly communicating with you is troublesome, getting mail to you, you don't have internet or television, then that's a key element that doesn't exist. But then secondly, how can those people cast a ballot? Republicans have a huge inherent advantage on election day voting. And so right now, as long as they, you know, it's October 3rd, can they get everything, these institutions back up? Because most of these local governments, these municipalities are dealing with, as they should be, the issues at hand. I have a feeling that this could potentially really hurt the Democrats, but it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. You got a lot of rural area out there in Western North Carolina. So the question is, who does it affect more? But I will say, when you're relying largely on absentee and early vote, not just in North Carolina, but in Georgia as well, this could really be a problem for Democrats. And remember, this is two of the seven swing states. I did a road to 270 on my show last night. I do it every Wednesday. Right now, if Trump takes Arizona, Georgia, and North Carolina, which I believe he will, he only needs to win one of those Midwest blue wall states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And the game's over. He's back in the White House with over 270 electoral votes.
Which one of those Rust Belt states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, looked the best for us? The last time we talked, I know I asked you this exact same question, and I believe you told me Pennsylvania. But yep. Does that mean, are we, I don't want to say we're writing off Wisconsin or Michigan. I'm not saying that at all. But is that kind of the game here? Focus on Pennsylvania and just kind of cross your fingers and hope for Wisconsin and Michigan?
So I'm going to say something that I haven't even said on my own show. This is where you just went out on timing. Damn you. Is Pennsylvania, I think when you look at the new registration numbers, it's all moving. I mean, you look at these registration numbers and the trend in polls, I feel very good about it for Trump. But I'm going to say this here on your show before I say it anywhere else. I believe that Trump is going to carry all three of the blue wall states. Now, somebody may watch this and say, Sean, you're an RNC guy, you're a Trump guy. But I'm going to tell you, this isn't based on who I want to win. I would tell you, when I do this road to 270 the last couple of weeks, I've shaded Wisconsin and Michigan light blue, then moved into toss-up. The trend is going in Trump's favor. In Michigan, I'll make this prediction as well. I believe that Mike Rogers will win the Senate race there over Elise Slotkin, the current congresswoman there. The trend is moving. Rogers just went up 5 in the latest Trafalgar poll. Trump is moving in the right direction. You've got to look at the trend and where they're headed. And right now, the trend in all those states, now we're 30 days out, but the trend in every one of those states is pro-Trump.
I actually tend to agree with you. That is a jaw-dropping thing to come out and say. I will give you that. But I agree that everything feels like it's going Trump's way. And what frightens me back to what we were talking about in the beginning is it seems like Democrats see that as well. And a scared Democrat is a scary thing. Okay, Sean, before I let you go, I have to ask you this. The ground game stuff, I get mixed reviews. I have all kinds of people on the ground in different places, well, just friends of mine. I don't have people, but friends of mine. And in some places I hear, wow, we're doing great, better than we've ever done. And some places I hear, where are they? I don't see the Trump campaign. Where are we?
Yeah, so this is where you and I are opposites. I have people, I don't have friends. So you've got the friends, I've got the people. So maybe we should all get together at some point because I need the friends, not the people. But, I will say this. You are not wrong to be worried about this. This is the first time in history where the law now allows outside groups, Turning Point, USA Action, America First, Works Action, to handle activities that traditionally had been done by the campaign. When I asked James Blair, the political director of the Trump campaign, on my show, if he had confidence in this, and by the way, I'm going to have Michael Whatley, the chair of the RNC, on Friday on my show. I'm going to ask him the same question. He said to me, James Blair, unbelievably honest, I have more confidence in some than others. That is not a ringing endorsement, Jesse. That's concerning. The only thing that gives me hope is when you look at a place like Pennsylvania, you've got a guy like Scott Pressler out there, and the numbers don't lie. You look at Lucerne County and a bunch of the counties in the middle, the registration numbers of newly registered people is out surpassing what the Democrats did, right? In Virginia, my state, we got we are trailing them, but we are losing by less than we did last time. Republicans vote on election day. So if we can actually just close the gap on early vote, that's a good sign for us. So as much as I'm concerned, it's sort of like going to the doctor after a diagnosis. Things look okay. You're not out of the woods yet, but I think we're moving in the right direction. So I am cautiously optimistic is the way I'd probably phrase it to you. I'm concerned about the reliance on too many third parties. When you can't control something, that's a problem. That being said, the numbers are good, which is what matters.
Fingers crossed. You want more of that? That's why I watch the Sean Spicer show. Go watch the Sean Spicer show. Sean, my brother, you, your mustache, have a good day. All right. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And I just want to once again say something that I mentioned at the beginning of the show. Hurricane Helene has been awful. The aftermath is awful. As we speak right now, people are suffering, and it's really, really tragic and terrible. But the American people rallying around them, supporting them, flooding in there to help in every possible way, airlifts, medical supplies, food, water, watching it has been so inspiring to me. So with all the ugliness in our politics and elections and all of that stuff out there, you should still remember that Americans are good. We are good people. We are good to each other. Even when our government is evil, we are good. So keep a hold of that, all right? All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.